Hi, and welcome. If you're looking for a story, a dose of the stranger than fiction side of the world we live in, then you've come to the right place. There are a lot of stories here to choose from, and today's is a new story, one that involves some history and obsession and definitely some confusion. There's a ghost in our midst, or is it a ghost? They call me the Ghost. I'm an independent dark operative on the dark web, taking on the mysterious and outrageous jobs that no one else will or can. This is one of my adventures. Today is a journey, trying to figure out what is dramatically haunting one man. The clock is ticking, and his mind is melting. Time is of the essence. Take a listen and enjoy. All right. Now, remember how crazy the pandemic was and how we all felt? Well, add to that some other giant mystery that seems to be also making you more crazy on top of everything else. This is how it was going for a man who I'll refer to as Ethan Blackwood. Unlike most of my clients, this guy was young. He hadn't had much time to establish his adult life and get really into it. But he had a lot with him. His family was very successful. He had a lot of support. These guys were spread out across the country and the world, really. Unfortunately, as he put it, though, his family was cursed. And that's how it started out, with this request from Ethan. What else could it be? He was at his wit's end. It was a regular day when this request came in. Things were quiet, of course, because the entire world was quiet, right? We all remember that. Well, we just made our way back from London at this time, where we had a job there. And I'll have to tell you guys about that too. But we just got back, and I was actually surprised because for some reason during this pandemic, people really wanted to get things done. I still have jobs right now to do from then. What we sort of figured out over time was that these people, they knew there were things that they wanted to address, but they had their everyday lives. And honestly, you know, didn't really want to deal with these odd incidents that they come across. But then during the pandemic, they all got this idea that, hey, now's the time. We can deal with this now. So anyway, while the world is basically watching Netflix all day, we had a lot of challenges on our hands. I mean, the travel, the moving around, the getting to people, it was all very difficult. A job that might only need 3 to 5 days, for example, started taking like 10 because of all the roadblocks. And we had to be careful. We didn't want to call any attention to ourselves, and it would have been almost impossible to call in for, you know, extra supplies and things in a timely manner. It was really basically kind of a mess. I mean, just people's everyday lives were a mess. So I'm sure you can imagine. We got back from London. And just so you know, we do have a smaller plane at our disposal, but that said, it was still hard to get in and out of places. I mean, we could never really explain why we were going anywhere. But we did have our connections, so we were able to get some good travel papers and things, you know, as a cover. But anyway, we get back from London, and I have to admit, we were tired. It took a lot to get out of there and back home, and it was an active job. So honestly, we were looking forward to kind of getting back and doing nothing like everybody else. But that never really happens to us. Like I said, we had a number of requests waiting when we got home. I read through them all. You know, we're all sitting around on the couches in the warehouse, except for Frankie. He was cooking some crazy Moroccan chicken thing, and he's listening, and everyone else is kind of sitting around where I am. And this request really caught my eye because of who it was. This guy, Ethan Blackwood, he was a younger guy, and that would be under 25 to you. He was young. He himself was not a big name yet, but his family was fairly well known. Ethan's father was a lawyer in a family of lawyers. That's why they're so well known. Their real names are similar, but let me say, you know, the dad, David Blackwood, the mother, Catherine. Ethan's sister was Olivia. They lived in this very wealthy area on the outskirts of New Orleans. And if you didn't know, it's not all about, right, the Mardi Gras and hurricanes. There's most definitely money there and other things going on. Ethan's family, so I'm clear, is one of those families, all right? Old money. The family has a long, distinguished history in the legal profession. Ethan's great-grandfather, Jonathan Blackwood, was a prominent lawyer who founded this law firm, and then his son, Ethan's grandfather, Robert Blackwood, continued the tradition of excellence and expanded the firm's practice, so the family itself was doing fine. Ethan's father, David, took over the law firm from Robert, and now he's built it up, again expanded some more, and it's now one of the most successful firms out there. David is known for his aggressive litigation style and has a reputation for always winning his cases. So they're those guys. Ethan's mother, Catherine, she's a socialite basically, but she kept her kids in line and on a path to success. It was kind of her focus. She was very active, though, in community organizations, and she met David while they were studying law at the same university. Now, Ethan's older sister, Olivia, she's a recent law school graduate who's also joined the family law firm as an associate. So she's ready to make a name for herself. She has exceptional legal skills. So that's who that is. Now, as for Ethan, he's currently a junior at the university. He majors in biology, even though his family expected him to follow in their footsteps, you know, become a lawyer. They were supporting him in his other interests. Now, in this request, Ethan tells me about his situation. Home alone, sent home from college because of the pandemic. He's bored. There's nothing to do until things start to happen. With Ethan's lawyer, you know, being this prominent lawyer, you might know of some of his cases, actually. But with this family being what it is, it was no surprise when Ethan said that his parents and sister were stuck in another country. I mean, they were fine. Unlike a lot of people that were stuck out there, they had money and means and a place to stay, but they had taken a trip to Greece, and of course Ethan didn't go because he had his finals and school to finish, but they go on trips all the time. He didn't really feel left out, but that's how they ended up in this situation. Well, anyway, one day, strange things start happening inside the house. Ethan says that lights flicker on and off, and objects are moving on their own. There's eerie noises that have started to fill the air. It's driving him mad. He thinks he saw something, but he wasn't exactly sure what it was, and it scared me. And so he's writing me, believing the house is haunted, his family must be cursed. He's kind of going out of his mind. It's a lot for him to deal with. And first, he talked to his grandfather, Robert, who lives not all that far away, and he actually believed Ethan that he saw something, or was at least interested, and he felt like it should be looked into enough that he gave Ethan my contact information, and so that's how I got involved in this. Now, I and the team, we've been a part of a lot of hauntings, right, and creepy things, but from what Ethan described, this definitely seemed like something odd. I mean, was it more than a regular haunting of sorts? That I wasn't sure, not yet. After we all got done reading and talking about, you know, what was provided to us in the request, we decide we're going to take this job. So we ate up Frankie's amazing Moroccan awesomeness. We felt good. In our talks after reading that request, we noticed a few odd things that Ethan mentioned about this haunting. The only thing he was really certain of is that he had absolutely no idea what was going on. All he knew for sure was that he was scared. He said he saw a ghost, he thought, but there was something odd about it. You know, it never really fully appeared. He was a confused mess, and we, you know, taking this all in and reading it over and over again, we got this twinge that this could be something bigger, and so we wanted to go with it. We talk about it and decide that, all right, I'm going to take Harley, Frankie, Ryder, and Jagger, and we're going to leave Scarlett back at the warehouse this time, just in case. And I mean, just in case we end up in real trouble, because there isn't a whole lot she can do during the pandemic. You know, should I have real trouble, she will be able to help, but we can't get good resources quickly. She can't join us very fast. So she's really there just as a backup in any way that she might be able to help us. This could just be a simple haunting, but with entities and things, you just can never be too sure. With travel the way it was, we wanted to be covered, so I wanted to bring a lot of people. There wasn't really turning back on this one because it was just so hard to get anywhere in the first place. Now, in order to get the most that we could to that location, we take to the road, actually. Even though it was longer, we would be mostly left alone, and we'd have ourselves and our items. It was the best option we saw with the least amount of risk. So we get everything we need or think we need loaded up. I mean, everything. And then we get ourselves all together and we go. We take our bigger van SUV type thing. It has a lot of special stuff in it. And actually, I don't think I've ever really talked about this vehicle really before, but we call it our Shadow Charger for obvious reasons. We need to be sort of hidden, but we need to get places absolutely, and we need to be able to work. This is a custom-built matte black SUV with tinted windows, reinforced doors. I mean, this is a big deal. The interior is fitted with high-tech equipment, including state-of-the-art computer system with real-time tracking and mapping abilities, as well as a variety of, you know, sensors for detecting paranormal activity. We have a pretty sophisticated communication system on board that also allows us to stay in constant contact with each other and our base if we need it. We do have the watches, but we always have backups, right? You always need that. The Shadow Charger is equipped with an extensive array of specialized tools, of course, gadgets, including, you know, things like high-powered flashlights, infrared night vision cameras and goggles, UV lights, all kinds of stuff. It has a built-in weapons locker that contains a variety of non-lethal weapons like, you know, tasers and tranquilizer guns. And then we also do have some more conventional firearms in there for self-defense, only in extreme situations. Because remember, killing is not our game. So, I mean, you get the picture. I mean, this thing is reinforced with armor and bulletproof windows. And I could just go on and on. I mean, you get the idea. This thing is really awesome. And we need that, especially at this time. We don't take it with us always because it is so valuable. But because we're in the situation we're in, we need to bring more with us in case we need more while we're there, because we, like I said, can't just get supplies quickly during this pandemic. Everything was a total disaster. And then, you know, I might as well go into this too. I haven't really gone into my presence or being on the dark web with you guys because, I mean, I know you know I have a secure line through there, and that's the only way that I'll take requests, all right? And I can't give you the real name of our database system, really, but there's an area where we gather information and actively work, and I'm going to call it the Nexus. So we're in there quite a bit. You know, we have a vast network of underground sources and experts. And I'm not going to get into all of that really right now, but I just wanted to give you an idea. You know, I connect with a lot of my clients there. We have different sections in this network, and each is dedicated to different things. So, you know, the dark web isn't all about illegal activity, but it's definitely a place where I can get my requests and work without just being out there, you know, if that makes sense. So that's that. Okay, well, we get to New Orleans. We've done a lot of research along the way, and we get to Ethan's. It's just after about 9:30 p.m. when we show up. And all I'll say is it was a beautiful house with these arches and brick. Definitely looked very old, and you could either think it's very cool, but on a stormy night, you might think it's very creepy. So it's kind of like that. Definitely historical. But with all the lights they had on and everything in the big front porch, it actually was welcoming, you know, even though we knew there were definitely issues inside. We get there. We don't even have a chance to knock because Ethan had apparently just been waiting anxiously for us inside ever since we let him know that we're getting close. So he opens the door and urgently rushes us inside. Well, Frankie stops him and lets him know, hey, we need a better place for our shadow. And he directs him to the back of the house where there's a large part of the driveway. He even has a gate. So Frankie gets back there, closes the gate, you know, gets all set up, and then he meets us inside. Now, upon meeting Ethan, we find him, you know, quite nervous and anxious, like I said. He is constantly looking over his shoulder. He seems to be a bit fidgety, you know, on edge, as if he's constantly expecting something to happen. He's clearly been alone for too long with his spooks, but there is something going on. Now, once Frankie's in and we're all kind of gathering, we ask Ethan if there's a place where we could chat. You know, where is he most comfortable? So he takes us to a room with couches and things. It's not really a full-on living room, but it looks like a nice place where you could have a social chat. You know, these houses have a million rooms. You know, might have tea in there or something. It has red walls, really dark, almost blackwood paneling. Very cool, tall windows. But anyway, we couldn't really be observing all of that exactly because Ethan was looking like he could lose his mind any minute. So we start asking him, you know, simply explain what the strange occurrences are that have been happening. He calms down a bit and then he starts listing out some of the bizarre things that have been going on. We know about the flickering lights and the moving objects, but in particular, we wanted to know about the apparition since he said it was strange. So Ethan finally sits down after he's been pacing around. He's still a little bit hesitant, but I assure him that anything he could tell us would most likely be very helpful. That's why we're there. We've seen and heard a lot, and we're ready for it. So he kind of laughs a little bit, sort of, trying to lighten it up for himself, I'm sure. Frankie's next to him, and he gives Ethan some reassuring taps on his back, you know? And so Ethan, he looks up at Frankie. He runs his fingers through his hair, kind of sits up like he's stretching, looked at the rest of us, took a big inhale, and then he started talking. And now it's about 10:30, right after you get through all the introductions and things, and he tells us a story, an experience. He was sitting in the main living room watching TV when he suddenly heard this strange noise coming from the hallway. It was about midnight that night. Anyway, he hears this, so he pauses the TV, and he said he just stopped, you know, to listen carefully. We've all done that. But then there's nothing, so he shrugs it off, just like all of us might have done, and he goes back to watching TV. Well, a few minutes later, he hears the noise again, and this time, he's sure it's coming from the hallway. He's positive. He slowly got up from the couch and cautiously walked towards the hallway. As he approaches, he says he saw a strange shimmering light in the corner of his eye. This light was translucent, sort of. Kind of seemed flickering, and in it, he said he could swear he saw, you know, this hologram trying to form of this figure. But everything was distorted. It was hard to make out, but he thought it looked humanoid in shape. His heart raced and he backed away slowly, keeping his eyes on what he could kind of see until he made it back into the safety of the living room. And he said he sat there trying to convince himself that it was just his imagination. But at the same time, he knew what he saw. He sat there in silence, he said, for 3 hours, just sitting there waiting. But then nothing's going on, no sound, not a movement, no lights, nothing. And that was the first time he ran into this kind of thing. This is when things get interesting because the whole way there, we really dug into this theory that sounded a lot like what he talked about, but I need a little bit more information just about Ethan himself before I dump our theories on this thing. I mean, because in his request, he kept mentioning how hard it seemed and how it wasn't working and this like apparition, you know, it was trying to be there, but it just couldn't be there. It was very odd. So we had to go with that information. Now, I acknowledge how heavy this all is for Ethan, and I defer to Ryder at that time. I mean, if you remember, or if you don't know, Ryder has a PhD in forensic psychology with a focus on pathology, and she became a medical examiner, which led her into a lot of conversations and questions from people whose loved ones had passed about the afterlife. So she kind of segued right into that. She very gently starts asking him, you know, some general questions. Does your family go to Greece often? It's a shame you were here alone. She reassures him that he's no longer alone. She starts talking about the afterlife, about how painful it can be, but how beautiful it can be, how things can get confusing to the receiver and the person on the other side. I mean, the one that the spirit that's showing up, they don't always have it that easy either. She sits down next to him and tells him a couple of stories. You know, she just starts talking to him to get him even more calmed down and get to know him a little better. And it did calm him down. You know, we kind of wandered around, but then we all end up back in the main room when they're done, they're wrapping up. And I compliment him on his house. And all he says, though, is, "So you guys can really help me?" And I tell him, "We can." Frankie and Jagger start to unload equipment and things that we're going to need or we think we're going to need in our bags and things like that. Harley, Ryder, and I, we sit down with Ethan and I start asking him about his grandfather. Why would he agree that something odd was going on? All Ethan knew was that something had happened to him the summer before and it affected him, but he didn't know what it was. He wasn't sure, but he said that, you know, this guy wasn't quite the same after that. It was like he was always a little bit spooked. So we need to talk to him, and Ethan ends up getting up to call him. And when he does that, we finish setting up what we know we want, at least at first. When the grandfather arrives, we all end up in the dining room. It's more of a meeting style around the table. We get through all the introductions. Robert knows who we are, of course, him being the one who gave our contact information to Ethan. This is our first time actually meeting Robert. So we kind of spend a little time with that. I let him know that we understand the issue, and I start getting into it. But as I'm doing that, the very awesome lighting above the table, it starts to flicker. The sconces in the nearby hallway, they also start flickering on and off. And then we start to hear this distorted and almost robotic sound. I mean, we're all looking up and around, and then all of a sudden, Ethan jumps up from his chair. He backs himself up against the wall, and he's yelling out, "There, there, do you see that?" His grandpa confirms and waves him back over to his seat next to him. Then it goes quiet again, and after a minute or two, we all jump to the equipment because we've set it up around the house, or they're setting it up, and our meters, they showed fluctuations in electromagnetic fields. And it was recorded by our EMF, and we saw that the temperature had also changed. It had gotten colder. Our devices also picked up on anomalous sounds, and there was static, some unexplained whispers or voices, but it could have also been a faint humming noise. We weren't exactly sure. Pretty much everyone was commenting on how the pressure in the room had seemed to change also. It felt like it did. It was like the air got heavier or denser for that time. Ethan then says in a more quiet voice this time, "And that's it. It's going to be quiet now." We all look at each other, and then Harley tells him, "It's okay. It's all right. This is a good thing because now we can get to work." Then I pop in and say that we need to start with Robert. We learn a lot of the same things that Ethan told us, that no one believed him, that it's a hard thing to take, but that it was all true and that they had come back. He explained that he was at the house, this is the grandfather, on an evening the summer before, the big pandemic. He was there early for a casual cocktail evening that the family did often on the back patio. The family was out, they weren't home yet, but they'd be joining him. So the help let him in, led him to the patio, gave him a cocktail. And when he finished that, he went in for a refresher when it happened. The same thing with the lights flickering and the crazy sounds. Felt like the air was moving too, he said, and then he mentions again that static. He didn't know how else to describe what he was seeing or feeling. His voice got quieter as he walked into the next room, and this room was really for entertaining, and it had the patio off of it. That's where he had been that night, and we all follow. He pointed up to an opening. You know the opening that's between rooms? There's no door, but it's like an arch, or it could be square, but it kind of separates the rooms out. He's looking up at that, and he said that it was right there above the opening. He almost saw it, but right at that moment when he's looking up thinking something's going to happen, the family comes through the front door, and you can see that from where he is. And right then, when that door opened, everything stopped. And he tried to talk to them about it, but everyone else pretty much did not want to talk about it, and it's bothered him ever since. That's probably why he's been a little different in Ethan's eyes. And Ethan says now it's always like that. It always comes back more and more lately, and it seems now it's more intense each time. And I asked him what that meant, and he had to think about it for a minute, and then he said it was like it was getting stronger or maybe closer. And my team and I are all looking at each other, and we agree it's time to start talking about some theories here. After we all get settled, I start with the familiar one, the theory that ghosts are the energy or essence of a deceased person that remains attached to a specific location or object, maybe a person, like Ethan's house or the things in it. How this energy can sometimes be released during times of high emotion or some kind of event. It's triggered, and then this energy sometimes continues to exist in that location, manifesting itself as a ghostly apparition. Maybe this is what he saw. Well, Ethan says, no, it wasn't. Well, I tell him another possibility is that some people believe that ghosts are a product of the human mind, only created by the power of suggestion or belief. This theory would, of course, suggest that ghosts are not real entities, but rather a creation of the human imagination, based on cultural beliefs and folklore. and fear. This would mean that there was nothing there at all, and that it would have had to have been in all of our heads, of course, because we all saw something. We saw those lights flicker. So do we all, are we all manifesting this vision? We all look around and agree, all of us, that no, that's not the case either. Now, before I continue, I want everyone in position, right, in case anything happens. So we take a little bit of time and we get set up because, you know, I'm moving into the big time. So I want to make sure everything's where it needs to be. And, you know, first of all, I know it seems like everything's moving fast to you guys who are listening. But, you know, when you're there, there's a lot more talking going on. The setup takes a while. So I'm trying to fit in as much as I can without having this story be, you know, 5 hours long. So I just wanted you to be aware of that. You know, a lot of time had passed at this point, and we in the house are coming up on midnight at this point. So we're all in position. And basically, I'm about to continue talking, you know, getting a little bit more serious here when things start up again. As the clock ticks towards 12 a.m., the tension in the room, you know, we're listening, we're talking, but it's tense. We, the team and I, are all huddled around the various pieces of equipment that we set up in the main living room, and we're just waiting for any signs of activity while I'm trying to share something. Robert, he fell asleep. He's snoring softly on the couch. He's in a blanket, but he's all right. He's not worried about anything. So yeah, it's right then that I go to introduce, you know, our third theory for this apparition. But suddenly, one of our EMF detectors starts to beep rapidly, indicating a significant spike in electromagnetic activity. We all look at each other. We know something's coming, and the adrenaline rises. But at the time, we need to try to remain calm and focused. We have been through things like this before, and we know that a spike in EMF activity, it does not necessarily mean that the apparition is about to show itself. But we do want to be ready. After a few more minutes, the temperature in the room starts to drop rapidly. Let's say, you know, if it were like 65 degrees, it then felt like it instantly dropped to 40 or 50. It gets chilly. You know, we're shivering just a bit. And then out of nowhere, there's this loud crashing sound from the other side of the room. And the grandfather, he wakes up. He's rubbing his eyes, looking around in total confusion. And then just as suddenly as it began, again, the temperature starts to rise again. The cold goes away and everything stops. The room is quiet once more, except for the sound of Robert's labored breathing as he tried to catch his breath from all of that. After a moment of absolute silence, other than that breathing, we rush to flip on the lights. We check on Robert, and we also check out the giant cracks that have now formed in the corner of the ceiling and on the walls up there. Something happened. Was something there? We didn't see it. It was like this blast came through. We couldn't see all the details of what was going on. Something happened. We just don't know what it was. I mean, it was a blast, but it wasn't. I want to make sure I say this right. You know, we heard plenty of those, right? We've heard a lot of blasts in our job. And this one wasn't exactly very powerful. It almost seemed weak. And we're all thinking, you know, what was it trying to do? What was this supposed to be? And Harley actually says it out loud. You know, what is this thing trying to do? And when she realizes that she spoke her words out loud, she's looking around at everyone. And, you know, we all just know we're dealing with something very real. We knew that something was happening. Ethan was actively confirming that this event that we just experienced was different than anything he'd experienced before. There was never anything physical like that that happened, aside from the lights and sounds and things. You know, we always think that, you know, aliens have all the technology, all those ETs that are not us. But aside from the fact that that isn't always true, what we never talk about are the other us's, okay? What do they have or don't have, for that matter? I mean, if you believe in the concept of parallel universes, for example, and other worlds that have us in it, then you might sometimes want to wonder what they have done or not done. Because no matter what, it will never be exactly the same as what we're doing here. Things will unfold differently. I mean, think about that. What if there was another you in a parallel universe, like so many people believe, with good reason? But what if they wanted what you had? Or what if something you were doing in your world was somehow destroying something in their world? Maybe someone wants to come over and stop something. Maybe they want something. could be anything going on. But we always go to aliens, don't we? We don't consider some of the other stuff that we also believe in. And actually, I'm going to just duck off quick here on a side note, because I got a question, because I brought up parallel universes. I got a question about different dimensions the other day and the names of them and where all the stuff is. But I really need you guys to know it's not that easy, you know, as it seems. And I explained part of this in the Facebook group, so you really should check it out there if you're wondering. And, you know, be mindful of the terms that we as the people use versus what things are actually accepted as in our world. It can be a fuzzy line. So just making that note, check it out if you want to. But okay, let me continue. So this happens, and I get up and I start walking around, and I stop between Jagger and Ryder. And I get kind of serious at this point. Like, I want everyone listening. And I look at Ethan and I tell him that actually, you know, to think of ghosts and other seemingly paranormal things as the spirits of people who have passed away is tunnel vision. And this is what I just explained to you guys. That's why I did that. So you know what I'm talking about. Another theory out there and that some people believe in is that there can be these glitches, right? Glitches in the very fabric of space and time. This got both Ethan and his grandfather's attention, by the way. And I explained that when this happens, it's believed that it can create a sort of tear between different dimensions, parallel universes. I mean, you should really have seen the looks on their faces at this time. I mean, it really threw them off, but they were extremely interested. I mean, what would you think if I said that to you? But I was, and the team was, we were very serious. So after they kind of wanted to blow it off, you know, they kind of wanted to just brush it off, like, that sounds crazy. Then they got serious again. I knew, though, I had to explain this explanation in a simple way. Now, when these tears happen, you know, this is how I did it. When these tears happen, there are times when things from other dimensions could leak through, or maybe they're breaking through. We therefore could maybe possibly be looking at something stuck between dimensions or trying to get through. I mean, Robert is the first one who speaks after I say all that, and he seems to understand a little bit about what I'm saying. So in a way, he starts taking the lead representing him and Ethan, and he says he's always had a passion for what could be out there and that he can respect the fact that, yes, there's another universe out there full of us. They won't be just like us. They will have their own things and lives going, and it could look very different than what we have going on. Remember that those that are in a parallel universe, you know, those other us's per se, it's the same for them. When they're thinking about us, we are a mystery. We are their parallel universe. I mean, humans have one thing in common, where we believe we are the only great thing out there, right? We are the only thing because that's all we know. But for those that are willing to expand their mind in a way where they can consider these alternate dimensions, the multiverse, all of that, then they also have to be willing to believe that the people on the other side feel just like we do. I hope that makes sense. So in our group, in that room that day, I could see the curiosity on both Ethan and Robert's face, but they weren't exactly understanding all of what I was saying. In either way, I knew I had more to explain. While we were driving and with the things we were looking into to get to New Orleans, we had narrowed down everything to what we believe this is, which is exactly what I was just explaining. Someone or something is trying to come over to our dimension or universe, but it looks like they are having some troubles. And since no one can really go out there and prove this in an acceptable way to our world, at least, there are only the theories, and one of those theories is referred to as the technological schism. Now, what is that? It's basically a term that highlights the divide between those with advanced technology and those without. This theory sets people apart from one another. It is the true great divide. Those in the parallel realm elite, they have it all. And everyone else, they have nothing. For us to move forward with this, we have to have some kind of plan, and we can't make a plan unless we have a theory. Get that? And this is the theory that we're going to go off of because everything here points to it. So basically, in this other dimension, the world was possibly much like our own until, you know, more and more new technology is discovered and created, for instance. This would allow for cheap and instant transportation across long distances, you know, things like that. And like all great things, the technology was quickly adopted by the wealthy and the powerful, who, of course, only use it to gain more, what? Wealth and power, by expanding their businesses and then controlling their resources all over the globe. This is a scenario that we could consider on Earth, right? So why not over there? So then, as it would be, the technology, as it advances, the wealthy elites would then become able to create these self-sufficient communities with all the greatness, completely independent from the rest of the world. These communities would be built in remote locations, you know, designed to provide everything the elite would need to live their luxurious lives. And so the separation would begin, sort of like the final separation, and where we all could be headed, really, if we don't stay in control of our own planet. These communities, where everything was great, would have to be heavily guarded. When you want to talk about walls, this would be something crazy. It would create an actual physical barrier, as well as a social barrier, between the rich and the poor. You can see how possible this is and how devastating it could be. Over time, so says the theory, the community would grow in size and number until they become something of parallel societies on their own planet. The wealthy elite would justify their separation from the rest of the world by arguing that they were simply using their resources and their great intelligence to create a better life for themselves and their families. In doing so, they would claim that they had no obligation to share their technology or resources with the rest of the world, and that the poor were simply lazy and unworthy of the benefits of their wealth. Sound familiar to anyone? So then, as the divide between the rich and the poor grew wider, the poor would become increasingly frustrated and resentful. So in this case, they would see the elite as selfish and uncaring and begin to resent their wealth and power. Meanwhile, the elite would become increasingly paranoid and fearful of the poor, the major enemy, and they'd begin to use their technology to create even more advanced security measures to protect their own flourishing communities. And in the end, the world would be split. Those living lives filled with advanced technology and luxury, and the others only struggling to survive. Should this theory actually apply here, we either have someone who is in the elite coming over for some reason, or we have someone on the poor side trying to escape. Ethan speaks up next, and he almost sounds excited. I'm sure in that moment, you know, he's glad to have at least any kind of answer to this, and it always helps if you're scared, you know, to have someone come in who might know something. You start to feel better, a little protected in a way. He wanted to be a part of the conversation, and he put in his two cents, and he commented that it sure sounds like it must be someone from the poor side because they can't make this work. That's the problem. And all they're doing is tormenting me day after day with all of this. And I tell him I couldn't agree more. We need to find out what's going on the other side. And no matter who it is, we have to stop it. You know, we can't have people jumping dimensions all the time unless they're very skilled and knowledgeable and there are agreements in place pretty much. If someone's trying to escape and they have been kept from any advances in technology and things, that group might not even know as much as we know, right? They might be behind us on the poor side. Because as we know, if you don't want someone invading all the greatness that you are and have, you keep them stupid, right? And that would be how this setup would be. The elite would know everything and the poor didn't know a thing. The danger of that is if someone's trying to escape, then they really don't know what they're doing. Even more reason to stop them. I mean, they know something. But Ethan's right. Whatever they're trying to do isn't really working. I mean, there's a lot going on here, guys. So, like I said, I can't go into every detail or we're going to be here forever. But I'm going to fast forward a little bit here. We have a lot of discussions. We have to move some of our equipment around. We decide on a few other things. We bring in some more equipment. And this basically brings us to the middle of the night. We're in a good enough position to at least have an idea of what's going on. We have to act on our idea because without it, we can't have a plan, remember? So we're going to need to figure out a way to stop and hold and then send back whatever's trying to come over. I'm hoping I can communicate with them. The team and I huddle together back in the dining room and try to figure out what exactly to do next. We kind of have to wait. But we know that we're going to need some kind of quantum disruptor. I've talked about that before. We have to disrupt the apparition's energy state and prevent it from fully crossing over into our dimension. To do this, we will be interfering with the quantum state of the apparition's energy field. It's a lot to say. And we have our QD, but it will need a couple modifications for this. We want to create an interference that will cause the apparition's energy field to become unstable, basically making it impossible for them to maintain a stable form should they come over to our dimension or fully come over. This will deter them because they'll be able to feel that. And I mean, I don't need to get into all this technical stuff because it gets somewhat complicated, but basically, so you know, we need to stop it from coming over, and then we need to contain it, hopefully communicate with it, and then we're going to send it back, hopefully for good. And it's not long before that chance presents itself. The cracks in the ceiling and walls by the ceiling are physical, but it's showing us a weak point. Somewhere out there, there's a weak point. They've shattered the glass, and they just need one more hit to get through, okay? We have to be ready. We're all set up, and we're waiting. And by this point, it's about 2 a.m. We are all there, and we're monitoring our equipment for the readings when there's a sudden sharp spike, and it seems to be coming from that same corner of the ceiling that has the cracks. It is clear that the apparition is trying to cross over again, so we all move in toward the source of these readings. While we're there, we see a bright, pulsating light start to emanate from the main crack in the ceiling. Jagger activates our portable electromagnetic field generator, and this causes that light to flicker more and dim slightly. To our surprise, next, we see the faint outline of a humanoid figure that Ethan talked about, and it's starting to materialize in the center of this light. We know we have to quickly contain this apparition before it gets too far. I see Robert, the grandfather. He actually kneels down on the ground and he starts on the floor and he starts doing the sign of the Holy Cross with his fingers. And then he puts his hands together and his head down and he just stays like that. Ethan, who is standing there and looking up like the rest of us, he's starting to get a little more, you know, wigged out about this. He starts to back away slowly. I look over at him and I can see the fear in his eyes. And then I look over at my team and, you know, they're ready. I'm standing by to do the communications with this apparition if I can. I plan to, and I hope it's possible. Harley and Ryder are standing by some of the technology. You know, they're fine-tuning the ED, they're monitoring the device readings, adjusting different frequencies, anything they can do to help this run smoothly. Frankie and Jagger, well, they have their own things to monitor, but mostly they're there to help us with some force. They're armed with more weapons than the rest of us, and they're there to be our cover and our eyes. I mean, if we're moving around doing different things, they need to kind of watch the overall picture in case there's anything that we need to be doing. The form within that light, it's flickering, right? But then it starts to get stronger. And when it almost seems clear, that's when we activate our energy containment device. This emits a bright blue energy bubble, if you will, and it forms around this apparition that's happening, and it basically is trapping it in place. We don't use this thing often. I mean, the containment device is designed, though, to create a powerful electromagnetic field around it all, holding the apparition in stasis, acting as a type of barrier, if you will, until we can hopefully communicate with it and then work to send it back. So if you can picture this, the light broke through the crack in the ceiling and it got bigger and bigger until it seemed as though there was a figure forming inside of it. It's almost like the light created this tunnel and we could see the apparition coming through that tunnel, but now we've stopped it in its tracks. When it got almost fully visible, that's when we stopped it. We wanted it to be as there as it could. We just don't want it to fully form on our side. At this point, there is now a bright blue energy bubble around the apparition, trapping it in place, okay? We see it struggling as if it's trying to break free, but it cannot. And at this point, should this apparition actually break free into our dimension, it would simply dissolve. We have not allowed it to fully form on this side, so it's not ready to step into our world. It's now time to try to communicate and find out exactly what they're doing. Everything seems to be holding steady, so we're moving on to that next phase. And this part's complicated, guys. So hope you can see why, you know, it takes a long time to get these stories together because there's so much to them. I can't tell you every little detail. Like I said, it would just take forever. But okay, we have to remember here that just because there's a parallel universe out there with all of us in it, we have to remember, right? It doesn't mean everything's the same. I hope now we can all agree to that point. And that being said, how do we know we're all speaking the same language, right? Because, of course, we probably shouldn't be. Other worlds form in other ways, no matter how similar they are. We have a language and they have a language. If they've had the benefit of trying to learn our language, that's great, but we have no idea. And it also doesn't communicate very well across dimensions. It's not like making a phone call, okay? Everything gets distorted. So when we try to talk to them, we're able to analyze the energy patterns and fluctuations in the apparition's attempt to communicate. And so while they're trying to do something or say something to us, we're collecting this information. We know that it's not the same as our own, and therefore we know that they're not speaking our language. We speak, and then we see it trying to speak back to us, but all we're hearing are these digital glitch sounds. And every so often, the figure seems to glitch in and out of an already blurred focus. So I hope you can get the point that this is not an easy conversation. Harley's been standing by with what we need. We will attempt to try to communicate with this apparition, and we're going to have to translate glitch sounds into something that means something to us. And that's what we're trying to do at this time. So to get this done, we need to use a device that can read and interpret brainwaves, all right? We, as a team, we've been through a lot, guys, as you know, and we've had a lot of trial and error in this area, and we've pulled out what we feel is our best way to try to communicate with this thing and establish a strong enough connection to be able to even communicate at all. We have a device that we brought with us that will be able to detect and interpret the apparition's energy patterns, and it will convert it in a way and into a form that is recognizable and understandable to humans through their brain, not the spoken word. As you know, nowadays, right? It's been around for a while, though. AI is becoming more and more popular, and we were able to use an advanced AI system that's been specifically programmed to interface with something like this and its energy patterns. Think of it as a type of translation device that is able to interpret and convert the energy patterns into audible or visual signals that the human mind can comprehend, right? That's what we need. So when it speaks to us, it'll probably come up kind of garbled, but it will be energy translated in a way that our minds will be able to understand at least most of it without hearing any words. And at the same time, the same is going to happen to them when we talk back. This is theoretically and ideally what should happen and should work. But with technology, you know, it doesn't always go so smoothly. Harley tells me that it's all set up though and ready, and everyone else is standing by. Well, the grandfather, Robert, he's still on his knees in prayer, but everyone else is eagerly watching. In order to communicate, I have an earpiece in and I'm holding two receivers in the palms of my hands. The receivers are for the energy, theirs and mine, and then the earpiece is so that I can hear the attempt at the energy translation. So I initiate communication by saying hello and I ask them if they can hear me. We see the humanoid figure take notice. You know, it's clear that they know something happened, like they're surprised. And we're all hoping that means it understood me. So I keep going and I ask what they're doing here. You know, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to get to? We see the apparition stop again as if it's listening or comprehending, and it struggles for a moment, but then it stops and it says something back. Because everything seems to be working enough for this to maybe work, Harley turns on the translator out loud, on speaker basically, so that everyone can hear what it's coming over as, the signals. And we basically hear this glitchy sort of faint in and out of computer sounding voice, because now that's doing the translating versus our brains. I need your help, it says. I was sent here because our world is dying. We were chosen because we were a part of this family, and we know the fortunes on this side, and we know the world is different. We don't have a way to survive. I mean, basically, they were saying, let us in. And that's the harshness of this. Life might not be so great over there, but we still can't let them get through. And we're all sort of taking this in. Robert finally looks up, and he realizes that, okay, they're not here to hurt him or his family, but they're just trying to save their own. I mean, we're all looking up at this apparition and at each other because it's terrible. We know we can't let this happen, though. We're pondering what to do next. But then we notice something else strange happening. Our apparition seems to flicker and fade in and out like something's going on in there, almost out of view, as if he's checking on something or it's doing something. Remember, we don't have an absolute clear vision of what this is. We got it as clear as we could. You know, who this is. We can see it's a person, but we can't see them in full detail. While we're looking up to see what's going on, again, we notice the white light getting bigger and bigger, as is our blue containment bubble. And then we notice that there are multiple apparitions appearing around the first one. It was like ghosts taking shape out of thin air right in front of us. We realize that there are others attempting to cross over from this alternate dimension. Of course, on the other side, in their dimension, it would look like the first one got through. They would have no idea, no way of knowing that we have stopped him in his tracks. The one thing that we don't know is how many entities can our containment bubble actually hold. We could end up with a major disaster on our hands if it can't hold what it has, and they fall through anyway. They would all be destroyed. We have to move fast. Jagger and Harley start up some of our other scanning equipment, and we start searching for any more signals. The energy trying to dump into this dimensional portal tells us that there are dozens, if not hundreds, of individuals behind this thing trying to make this crossing. We know we have to work even faster. While Harley and Jagger are monitoring the size of what is trying to come through, Frankie and I work to modify the containment device. We need a larger bubble that can hold multiple entities at one time. We're actually able to tap into some of the energy that they are providing so that we can expand our bubble, our radius, and hold. This will hold for a while. It'll help it for a bit, but it could destabilize if too much happens and things start to happen that we're not ready for. Of course, they would try to cross over and have some kind of weapon on them. I mean, who would leave a dimension without one, right? I'm not sure how they could be certain it could work, but I suppose with their advanced technology, they would have all that figured out, whereas we don't have all of that figured out. Well, apparently they've developed some kind of technology over there that allows them to shoot these powerful energy beams that are actually capable of breaking through our containment barrier. This is bad. I'm sure these entities are confused. They probably feel like they're being taken into custody or something, when we're really just trying to protect them. But what happened was we were working to get communications back up and running with our first apparition, but while we were doing that, this laser-like beam shoots out of our containment bubble, and it hits Ryder in the shoulder, burning through her thin leather jacket. She starts checking herself to see if she's okay, and while she's doing that, we're almost ready to be set up for communication again, and just when I get started, again, another laser beam shoots out of the containment bubble. I mean, these guys are trying to fight their way in. The problem is, now they've hit Jagger, and this one got him right in the thigh, and he falls to the floor. I look at Frankie and Harley, and we know we have to move even faster. And the first thing we need to do is to be able to counteract those beams that are shooting out of our bubble because they are making weak points. I start my communications with Harley monitoring the levels, and Frankie gets to work modifying one of our devices that we brought that's actually capable of absorbing energy, and he reconfigures it so we'll be able to tap into that energy that they're putting out and use it on our containment bubble. Once the device has sucked up enough of its energy, it's triggered to release the energy back in a controlled burst. And Frankie gets that done, and he gets working on fusing the energy from both sides, trying to strengthen those weak points. And so now it kind of seems like we're in this little war when we're just trying to help them. Even though I'm sure they believe they should be here, they just can't. Not in this way. It'll take a long time in our world before we become a refuge for other dimensions, okay? It would be too many people and too many people that don't understand what really is going on, and it could cause a very big mess. We have everything on speaker again. You know, Harley has that going, the communication. I'm connected again with my palm sensors, and I yell out, you know, we're not here to hurt you. And I'm doing this over and over again till I finally see the bigger apparition in the middle take notice of what I said, and then things go quiet. This is the original apparition. They're the clearest, but it it gets even clearer. And even we're not sure how he's pulling this off, but it's almost like they pushed their face as close as they could to the energy barrier, the lining, and the vision gets bigger and clearer. It kind of reminded me of when you look through a magnifying glass. If you see someone doing that, you know how everything's big. His face got huge in our bubble. And although it was still fuzzy, it was more clear. What it looked like was a different version of Robert. So this absolutely gets Robert's attention, and he slowly starts walking forward towards it. I mean, this bubble is growing, guys. You couldn't help but be a little stressed out that this thing was going to burst, you know, pop like a balloon that gets too full. I mean, I can't explain to you guys enough how fast we were trying to move and how stressful this really was. Robert, he asks for my communication device, the sensors, the earpiece, and I give them to him. And it was the craziest thing, but he starts communicating basically with himself, his other self, at least in this place. And I'm not going to give you a line by line, but basically we were right. They were stuck in their world, and our suggested theory of the technological schism, that's what was going on. They were stuck in a world where technology is not for everyone. There just were too many things the powerful wanted to keep for themselves. It became a world not for all people, but a world where the elite have won. And I'll admit, it sounded awful. They were legitimately struggling, but in this case, we still cannot save them by bringing them here or allowing them to come in this way. Just like, you know, aliens, they can't come down and save us, guys. We're our own group or species. We have to save ourselves. We can't disturb what's going on there, and they can't disturb us in that way. There's some pretty sad moments between Robert and his other, but he was our voice because he was connected. It was himself trying to come where he knew his home was over here. This man had probably worked a long time to find freedom for himself on the other side, for himself, his family, and his friends. But that doesn't make it the right thing to do. You can't just move to another dimension when you're doing it like this. Okay, so after a bit with Robert done with his little conversation, it seems that they're angry. But again, there's nothing we can do because they've realized we can't let them pass. They're going to have to go back. But this was a one-way ticket for them, okay? They weren't ready to do that. They weren't prepared to do that. I mean, when you're escaping, you don't figure how you're going to get back. You just go one way and get out. We start getting to work on the different energies that are at play here, okay? There's a few different things going on. We have energies from different dimensions. You know, they all have their own unique type of energy signature. So we need to identify the full picture so we can help with the travel so that we can configure an opposing energy field with that same signature that they have. If we're correct, it will create a sort of vacuum that will pull them back. You could think of it like creating a magnetic field that repels the opposite energy signature. We had to modify our little particle accelerator to help create this reverse energy vacuum. By adjusting the energy levels and polarity of the accelerator, we can get a powerful enough surge of energy that will force them back. We had to work extremely fast, and I know I keep saying that, but this was a rush situation. We know our equipment, all right? We train on it. We use it, even if it's something that we don't use that often. Believe me, we are trained to know all about all of it. And this allows us to work fast in these situations. For this, we need to repel them home basically without any unwanted side effects. You know, we'd like to send them back in one piece and leave us in one piece. Once we finally get this set up and we get a solid lock on that energy signature that we need for this, we are ready to go. We take our places behind Robert as he bids farewell to his other. This was not the best of moments. There they are. There they were. The same in man, but not the same at all. Robert bows his head, takes off the equipment. Harley turns off the speaker, and Frankie starts everything up. The time is now. As the energy surge builds in the containment bubble, you can see the apparitions start to move around. We're sure they're feeling some kind of, you know, impending doom or disappointment. Who knows how long they tried to get this going under the radar in their world. We watch as the containment bubble swells and then releases. It began to flicker and fade as if struggling to contain the massive amount of energy being generated. The team and I can feel this powerful force pushing against us. I mean, it's in the air, as if the fabric of reality is being stretched and distorted. Very unique feeling. The energy's building up strength before it sucks up back into the other side. The apparitions, they start to blur more and blend together. The bubbles getting tighter. The light gets more intense. I mean, so intense that it's hard to even keep looking at the containment bubble. We know we're looking, but we're also covering our eyes. Finally, the energy seems to wrap around them like a vortex. And there's this big flash of light and a boom. And then it swiftly sucks them back into their own dimension. The apparitions, everything, disappear completely. As this surge dissipates, it did leave behind this strange kind of otherworldly residue, like some strange powder that came out of this thing. Like, you know, if something exploded and a powder came out of it, it was kind of like that. It's on us. It's on the furniture. I mean, Ryder and Jagger, they're hurt. They were also these strange little particles, interdimensional particles. They're swirling around. They dissolve before they hit the floor, but we see them everywhere. They definitely were different. They're pulsing and shimmering. Then they just float down and the lights go out. Just before the big lights out, and while we could still see our containment bubble, we saw one hand. And this just got to all of us. This one hand that seemed to be reaching out for that bubble lining, like touching it, like a goodbye in a car window or something like that. I mean, that was pretty hard to watch through all of it. The whole thing was very intense. When this was done, as you can imagine, we're all a bit stunned, a little bit wiped. It was mostly hard on Robert, though. He really did want to save himself. We all had to talk it out. It would seem, you know, like, why? Why can't they just come? Well, we have to get out of our egos first, okay, people? Because just because we are the almighty human race in our own minds, that does not give us the right to go wherever we please or do whatever we want. And we really have, as a people, sort of blended together, you know, all these meanings, you know, dimensions, parallel universes, the multiverse. It's human nature to want to make sense of it all, and the endless hope for all things that we'd like to believe are around us. But it's just not that easy. It's not as simple as people make it. For instance, you might be wondering, how come I go to see Chloe? I went and saw Chloe, right? And how come they can go live in their dimension when I can't do that here in this case? And someone asked about Chloe and her dimension this week, but you have to remember that was an entirely different situation. And this is what I mean. An entirely different set of circumstances dealing with CERN and what they had set up there and what they had set up on the other side. There were people on both ends. This was a very managed transfer between spaces. This one here, it's chaotic. It's a scramble. There are no agreements on both sides. There's nothing organized here in either side. So this, what we're dealing with in New Orleans, it just could not be. A lot has to happen to balance out things when you start moving parts, you know, between dimensions or parallel universes. We didn't have any of that here. But at the end of the day on this job, it just was what it was. This was not a haunting. And Robert was onto something, although a bit sad. He was accepting, and he knew that this made sense. If you choose to believe in things like this, then you have to be willing to accept the very ugly of it as well. We need to get away from, you know, monsters are coming or evil aliens or, you know, it's like a sci-fi movie and those rose-colored glasses of your speculations and ideas, that hope and excitement for something. There's so much more to all of it. You know, all of it, the good, the bad, the unfortunate, and the ugly. It's just what it is. We ended up hanging out there for a few more days. First of all, Harley and Jagger were hurt. We weren't in a big, giant hurry. And we helped clean things up, get everyone back to good and solid places. That was a bit of a challenge. But by the time we packed it up, they were doing much better. Ethan said that this experience would probably not be something that he'd want to share with his father, at least not right away, but maybe someday. He was glad that the family wasn't there for that, because they might have tried to shoot something down. Maybe we couldn't have come, and who knows what could have happened. Repairs on the house were in the works by the time we left. And then it was time to go, and we said our goodbyes, and we hit the road. Did we shut down attempted travel like this for good? Well, clearly, we can't do that. But when it's something like this, it really does need to be stopped. You know, someone will try this again someday. Can you imagine two very different worlds like this colliding? It just cannot be. We traveled in amazement, basically. We were all just kind of stunned by the whole thing, all the way back to the warehouse. We took our time. There was something about driving across a very quiet country, knowing that it was our world. We still have a chance to make it. What could the elites get away with? We'll only know when they try, and only if we're paying attention. Let's hope our world stays strong. It was unsettling indeed to know what was going on, but you have to remember that kind of setup is possible anywhere, even here. So let's just know our world, guys. Keep an eye on things, shall we? And that's all for this story in this episode today. But no, there are a lot more stories to share. Thank you for listening today to This Job. I really appreciate you taking the time to be here with me. And until next time, guys, I will talk to you all soon.